Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply. USAA.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to Monday's episode of a Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler and I am joined in person by Tony Anderson.
Hello, Craig.
And Craig Cairns.
Hello, Craig.
Oh, just smashed your microphone as I'm pointing at you. Yes, in person.
It's all like phallic symbols all about the room, really.
Right. The microphone's like, I was like looking at your things on your wall. I was like, what? Although you do have Alien, there's a lot of phallic symbolism in Alien.
Is there?
Yes. Like if you think about the chest buster kind of coming out. It's kind of like the whole alien thing is it's kind of an underlying thing about kind of men's fear of rape kind of thing.
Right. I'd see, consider I love Alien. I've never deep dived to that point in it, but thank you for that. And that's changed. Maybe that's my fear.
So that's why aliens are skinny. Right, so let's get from that to the Scottish Premiership this past weekend. There were 6 games, and we're going to do our usual on a Monday and go through them all. And we shall begin with the game of the weekend, undoubtedly, in the Highlands. Ross County 3, Dundee 2. County off the bottom of the table, coming back from a goal down twice to win it in the end with a little bit of hand from some shambolic Dundee defending and goalkeeping.
Really, I mean, that Legzins mistake, that's the worst mistake of the season for me.
It was a pathetic attempt.
It didn't make any sense to me. Like,
and then to look for someone to blame, like to try and claim he's been fouled or something like that.
And like when you get the replay staring down him and you see the way that he tries to run round him, it's like the most apologetic thing for a goalkeeper of all people, the most protected species in football, to run round them. And to try and come and collect the ball. But by the time he's come to collect it as well, the ball's at his cock. It's at cock height. So it's just absolutely shambolic. Just push the guy out of the way, because it is his ball all the way. It's so easy. Push your defender out of the way, collect it. And then that just seemed to set. And like these things happen, especially for teams in the bottom of the league, teams like Dundee who do this a lot. Mm-hmm. It sends shockwaves around the team when they're doing really, really well. And then all of a sudden, Marshall's making a mistake and it's costing the game, because there's no reason. Malky Mackay's given it the whole, oh, we had to fight our way through it.
Sorry, what was he saying?
you know the type of things that they always say, we had to grind it out and all that, but something like, nothing was ground out, it was purely the other team has gifted you the win. Don't get me wrong, if Hibs done that, I'd be giving it the, oh, we're fighting our way for the bottom, we're back, but you know what I mean, it was just purely gifted to them on a plate, because what I saw with the highlights, what I read, Dundee were sort of really on top in the first half and they were playing some really fast football. You were watching it, Craig, eh?
Kids. Yeah. And well, they're missing a few key players defensively now, and Burnon, Ashcroft, and they lost Adam fairly early into this one. But yeah, you're right, they were the better team for the first half. I'd say probably over the 90 minutes, there's an argument that they were the better team. I think County have maybe played better in matches and not come away with anything earlier on in the season. But yeah, you mentioned Marshall. That's quite often it's happening to Marshall now. They're clearly, as I said, and Legston, sorry, the day before in the podcast, I had like talked about how he's one of the more solid keepers in the league, and he's thrown that right back in my face because, as you said, that was an absolutely howling mistake. He's just got to take charge. He's just got to either push them out the way and gather it, or stay where he is. And because it's really unfortunate for Mullen because he can do absolutely nothing about that.
I was talking about this the last couple of weeks when I've been on the parts of Ross County that do quite excite me, though. I really like the options they have in behind the striker. I mean, interestingly enough, considering we're going to be talking about the top 50 on the Patreon, the Wreckers top 50, I know that one of the top two, the only ones I know is that Jordan Waite was one of them. He now can't get a game for one of the worst teams in the league. But I know he's in the top 50. But like the sort of the options, Charles Cook, Callahan, Hungbo, and obviously Blair Spittle as well. There's a lot of options.
They're quite like, I mean, it's particularly on this show where we're continually blasting them over their choice of manager, but like, we've been through all of it, through that, so we should probably just leave that in the past and just secretly wishing the team gets relegated. But I kind of don't want them to get relegated because I do quite like the actual makeup of the team, and I think they're quite exciting to watch, and I think they've played reasonably above their station for a lot of this season as well. And like the front three is all kind of, well, the front four actually, you say, are all quite decent players to watch. I mean, Callahan's a bit rough around the edges, but he's always quite, his kind of lumbursting style is always quite entertaining. He's always kind of been a decent goal threat as well.
He's a pure Scottish Premiership player, yeah. Ross Callahan.
Hungbo and Charles Cook are both, you know, fast as cats and a lot of fun to watch in the wings. And even Dominic Samuel now is coming in a game, which is good for me because I've got him in my fantasy team.
Which is a complete luck. Nobody, there were never a point like, I really fancy that Dominic Samuel.
Well, I had to sign him because it was like literally nobody left, and I had to replace Callum Hendry after he was loaned out to Kilmarnock.
I've still got James Scott, and I feel like that's like, that's just hanging around me on a daily basis like a cloud.
But Dundee's problem, and how they're gifted this game away, is how they're going to drop a lot of points this season. The defence, as we've said all campaign, we've said this coming into the season, it's not good enough, and it continues to not be good enough. You look at the back four, Cammy Kerr, Liam Fontaine at age, 34, I think he is now? 35, Liam Fontaine. Ryan Sweeney is, I think he's okay, but I wouldn't really go much further than that. And Jordan Marshall, as we've talked about, has had his struggles points this season, so they're a decent enough team. Good team to watch as well. A lot of exciting players. Luke McCowd's two goals in this game were both excellent.
Excellent goals, yeah. Especially the first one, yeah. Two excellent goals.
They just give away too many simple, make too many dumb mistakes in defence. And it's the worst thing for a team at the bottom of the table to just allow your opponents to get easy goals that they'll push your heads down.
So Ross County got away with that to a point last season. They managed to survive despite gifting things over and over again. But Dundee, you've got to imagine they'll be entering the market for defenders. There's surely a bit of money there.
They should do.
Yeah.
McPick's quite good at recruiting players. That seems to be one of his biggest strengths, is that players really seem to like him and want to play for him. And he has quite a lot of connections in the game. He seems to have been like a very good networker as a player. He obviously knew he was going to do this job someday. So he needs to really find a pal who's a centre half.
He also bounces back a lot, but it does seem at the moment like it's one step forward, two steps back for Dundee at the moment, whereas their opponents here, Ross County, they feel like they're on an upward trajectory. They have a fairly settled side. They've dealt with a few players having to drop out the team, which shows that they have a system there that works, and it's not just about the individuals there. And Dundee, I think one other thing to add about their performance is Lee Griffiths came on at 2-1, and it seemed like a pretty strange substitution at the time. Came on for McGowan, and Dundee started to seed a bit more in the centre of the park, and it just seems like when he was first brought in, Dundee were doing okay in their attack, and it seemed like he came in and disrupted it a little bit, and it feels like he did it in this game a little bit as well. And then that one chance that he gets, the one big chance he gets, he doesn't take it.
Well, I was saying this last week with Craig Anderson. One thing, I've been relatively impressed with McPake's bravery and how he's treated it with Griffiths, because I'm going over old ground because I literally said this exact thing last week, but I enjoyed the fact that he brought Griffiths in, he was playing him a lot, and we were like, I don't know if this is working, and I really, really did think it was going to be, he's going to play him constantly, because it's his, not his pal, but a guy that he knows, a guy that he's brought in, he's very high profile, he'll feel it, and he's been willing to drop him. And I still think that was, and that's been really good. And obviously Mullins came in and been
helped
superb
when he got suspended.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that gave him the, I suppose that gave him the out, to try and Mullins made it impossible to drop him recently. So yeah, there's still positive, but like you said there, that rather than it just being forcing Griffiths on, that was maybe quite a, because that's a tactical change, isn't it? He's thinking of a midfielder for a striker.
Mm-hmm.
Griffiths is, since joining Dundee, he's only got one goal in 11 games. Is it too early to call him finished?
Well, it's too early for this podcast, because every time we do it, we'll reignite him now. With Scott Brown.
I want him to be reignited.
Okay. I mean, I would love him to be reignited because he's good to watch. He's fun. He's one of the more, he's one of the more maverick strikers in the league. But there's a lot going on in that man's life, head, and tummy,
testicles,
and testicles. That there's a huge. I don't want to be going over old ground with Lee Griffiths. I feel like he takes a bad rap, and deservedly so sometimes. But when you bank it all up and you put it out there, you're like, it's hard to see him now at this age really reigniting it ever again. There'll be the random sort of rocket launcher for 30 yards or something, I'm sure. That'll be fun. But if he's not going to be doing it at Dundee, where do you kind of, and no disrespect for Dundee,
Livy next season.
Yeah, where do you go? Maybe a Martindale.
Back
maybe,
where it started.
Maybe that's what we need. David Martindale, a troubled soul who's come back and has pieced it all back together. And he brings Lee Griffiths firing back. There's the redemption story that we need.
This is a Ken Loach film here.
Yeah.
Right.
Get Peter Mullen and Brian Cox. Peter Mullen playing David Martindale.
And Martin Compton plays Lee Griffiths.
Yeah. Despite the side difference being ridiculous, but it doesn't matter.
Craig, anything else to add on this one before we move on?
Maybe mention Luke McCowan more, because you watched the game, Craig, and I feel we did just peruse over the guy who scored a double.
I mean, the first finish is absolutely fantastic, and the second one, it's all about the touch, isn't it? I mean, it's a great finish as well, but the first touch is brilliant. It's a lapse in defensive duties from Hungbo, I think, that gives Marshall all that space. And Marshall, to be fair, has that in him. He's just seems to be culpable for quite a lot of goals at the moment. But I think if we're going to mention anything else from this game, it'd be Regan Charles Cook. He became the top scorer, their top scorer over the season this weekend. And I don't think anybody really seen that. I know you were taking a bit of credit, Tony, but I don't think anybody saw it when he first came in that he would be. No.
Well, I think that was his problem. The problem was when he first came in, he looked rubbish.
he was like falling over the ball and that. He's giving me a bit of Ivan Sproul vibes, Regan Charles Cook.
But even before we saw him play for County, we looked at his record and it was like, okay, he's supposed to be like a creative attacking player, but he doesn't score a lot of goals. So for him to be top scorer this season, it's quite surprising.
But County do seem to, that's one of the areas of the park they've had sorted for a good wee while now, is the wide areas. They've just not had as many games as they would have wanted in recent times for various reasons. But and as you kind of alluded to earlier, they may have sorted their striker issue out as well, which has been, they're not by far not the only ones in the league, but they were one of the teams that were really struggling to get anything from any of their strikers.
And it's exciting with Charles Cook, who's been like really good this season. Even though I was saying there might be room for Randall Shipp, right? I think maybe all agreement could.
Yeah.
And Charles Cook could maybe, if they were wanting to be really, they're shit at the back anyway. I was saying this, they're shit anyway defensively. Maybe Charles Cook could go into the fullback position. They could have Blair Spittle, because Blair Spittle loves to do the cutting. You know, when he comes inside for the left and he does those deep crosses, which has actually created a lot of goals for them this season. I mean, the winner comes from Blair Spittle doing that, and then that would give Charles Cook the room to get in, to go on the outside of him. But I could also say people like, well, why would we make our top scorer get further and further away from the goal? So
I would be good for that.
Yeah, but there's options there where they could go real balls to the wall.
Right, let's get on to the team that County leapfrogged at the bottom of the table. After this.
Hi, it's Craig Fowler here once again to tell you about Manscaped. Christmas is coming up thick and fast, and you need to find some little presents to go in those stockings, or a big present to surprise one of your loved ones. Either way, Manscaped has got you covered. Manscaped is a leader in men's below-the-waist grooming, and they have served more than 4 million men worldwide. Get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with the code TERRACE. Now, if you need a big gift for somebody else or one for yourself, perhaps, Manscaped's best-selling product is a Performance Package 4.0. This gives you everything you need. You've got the lawnmower body trimmer. You've got the weed whacker for ear and nose hair. You have the liquid formulations like the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and the Crop Reviver Ball Toner, which maximizes your hygiene routine. You also get the boxers and the travel bag as well with that package. They've also got some suggestions for little things to put in those stockings. Manscaped signature cologne, Shears 2.0 luxury four-piece nail kit, the Crop Mops ball wipes, which make you nice and fresh down there, and, as I already mentioned, the Crop Reviver ball toner and refresher. All of them would be perfect just to top off those stockings. And you should be glad to know that these formulations are vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, and paraben-free. So once again, get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with the code TERRACE. That's 20% off, free shipping, manscaped.com, code TERRACE.
Right, we're back to talk about St Johnstone, who are now bottom of the Sids Premiership. They've lost their last three games, no wins in four, and they were beaten 1-0 at the weekend by Aberdeen. At points this season, performances haven't been good enough, but quite often performances have been solid enough. They've just not been able to score. They've only scored 9 goals in the league all season in 16 games. That makes them lower scorers by quite a distance. Livingston are next with 14. So they're the only team not to get in the double figures so far this season. And you can, again, it seemed like that this past weekend. Chris Kane had a couple of decent chances.
You're very unlucky with one of them, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't manage to get the goal, and then they were done in the end in terms of it should have been a free kick. It was handballed by Teddy Jinks before he smashed it in. Does he only score good goals as well? Like,
he has got some. He has got a cracking technique, Teddy Jinks. The handball aside, but he does. You're right. He does. His finishes tend to be very, very good. But yeah, St Johnstone just seem to be lacking a sort of spark, don't they? It just seems to be a bit of a kind of tired side. There's no kind of dynamism there, or there's nothing that exciting about it. You don't really see where it's coming from. And is it as simple as that Davidson hasn't really been backed in the transfer market? Because I mean, you could say that from the perspective of the centre midfield maybe, but the central defence is pretty much the same as it was last season. I mean, I know you've taken out the best defender out of that, but they've covered okay for him since he's left. That's not been their big issue this season.
They've conceded 16 goals, which is only Celtic and Rangers have conceded fewer.
Yeah, there you go. And in attack, it's the same guys he had last season, minus Hendry, plus Virtanen, who has been brought in under his watch. So
he's also missing the Israeli guy. Well, I've just forgotten his name. Striker.
Oh, he left in the summer, Melamed.
Yeah, Melamed. So there is a few.
So he got like 6 months out of him or something, didn't
he,
in the end?
Because I think sometimes the problem, we spoke about this last season, St Johnstone, is they just seem to have so many strikers, and it was over all of them, got them enough goals. So like everyone would chip in with four, five. And now that they've taken away even a couple of them, that means that they've just lost that exact amount of goals, because there's zero goals comes from anywhere else. Last season it was Rooney, but he seems to very much be a cup specialist. He does. He even scored in the Dundee game in the League Cup this season. I don't know if he scored. I don't recall him scoring in the league yet this season. So just like we're taking it, was like they ran with far too big a squad last season on paper, considering it was the COVID and there was nobody in there. But that they kind of needed that to sort of freshen up and to have enough, because now you're right, when you say the word tired, I mean, it's Liam Craig again. Liam Craig has been good for St Johnstone, but you're asking him to go again. You've taken Ali McCann out of there.
Aye, Bryson. Ali McCann with Ali Crawford isn't the same. Botherspoon hasn't been, well, he's injured now, but he wasn't any good before he got injured. Glenn Middleton, really, he was quite a good
He's reverted to type.
No, he reverted to him as Glenn Middleton.
Yeah, he's made to every other Glenn Middleton there was, apart from a 2 months period last season.
When he first came at the Rangers team, he was scoring goals against Spartak.
Yeah. So, like, I just don't know. Like, I said this on a Patreon when we were doing the here's a wee spoiler. There was the worst Scottish Cup winners of the century. I was edging Middleton towards it because, really, we're talking about a 1 month period or a 2 month period where he's done anything, really, and now he's went back to being shit. But they really hung their hat out on Middleton. They went and got him. They've got him there again, and he's really not doing it whatsoever.
And they need somebody. They need somebody like him, somebody like O'Halloran, somebody like even Chris Kane starts scoring. Somebody starts scoring some bloody goals.
But Kane's, I mean, I've not got it in front of me, but Kane's goal scoring must be 3, 2, 4, 5, a double figure run in the championship. So you'd be asking someone to do something that he's never, ever done before. And that's not me taking away the sort of the usefulness of Chris Kane. But goals isn't something he's ever done, so you can't just suddenly expect
not
that
huge amounts of them. Yeah. I'd totally forgotten about Melamed, by the way. That's a good shout, because he was, I know he missed out on a few big games towards the end of the season, but he was key to
you're right, Tony.
Various
scored,
parts of their season.
He only scored 4 goals last season.
And everyone was raving about him. I'm having a huge season. So yeah, like what Craig was alluding to there about Melamed, yeah, maybe he missed out a few times. But if you're a team that wins 1-0 most of the time, see if you take any goals at your team. If you win 1-0 all the time, every goal you're taking out is like points. Yeah. Like if you're every goal that less is like you're taking away 3 points, a point. So like you're basically you're saying they've scored 9 goals. They must have something like 11 points. They basically got a point a goal.
They've got 14 points.
Well, there you go. Maybe I got a bit carried away there, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, Chris Kane scored twice this season, but both of them were in the same game. So that's almost like, you almost don't want that. Then they won 3-1. It's like, no, can we take one of them away? Put it in a 0-0 or a 1-0 defeat. We just keep expecting St Johnstone to turn things around. Are they? Craig? It's getting a bit late now. One thing I should say, they do have 2 games in hand over quite a lot of the league. And the game in hand over Dundee, who are only 2 points ahead of them.
Well, I've been enjoying Hibs having games in hand and nothing's changed.
I know why. They're probably saying games in hand at teams at the bottom of the league is that they're more likely to not get anything from them. Yeah. So they're less precious as games in hand at the top of the league.
I was doing, if we win all the games in hand, we'll be joint in third. We'll only be in fourth. We'll be in fifth. Now we won't even be in the top 6 if we win it. I have learned to this year, don't bank on anything for the games in hand.
To answer your question, I think a lot of it depends on January, basically, because how much he's backed and how much and how well he does with what he's backed with, because the end to the last transfer window was an utter shambles, where they let their 2 best players go on the last day and didn't have a coherent plan for replacing them, basically. And the players that they have brought in haven't been good enough, the ones that they have tried. So, I think a lot of it's to do with that. And I know there's lots of questions being asked about Callum Davidson at the moment, and I think that's premature, and I think it falls into the same thing. I think he deserves at least another transfer window to try and rescue this before it's even questioned about whether he loses his job or not. The guy won you 2 cups in a season.
I think it shows the quality of the league as well, that St Johnstone are bottom. Because I think in other years, I don't think even playing as badly as they have and even struggling to score goals.
And it's tight. It's very tight.
And also as well, I could have said this about the Dundee Ross County game, that you get such a great fixture out of 2 sides who are struggling at the bottom of the table. And we've not always had that in recent years. The bottom half of the Premiership has often been...
Last year it was fucking diabolical. It was. I mean, you only have to look at... Hibs and Aberdeen last season, they were never scintillating.
No.
And they absolutely walked third and fourth. Like, there was never any danger of anyone coming anywhere near them.
I said that to Duncan on the... On the podcast, we talked about Jack Ross. Like, you don't want to like completely dismiss like the achievements of finishing third, especially when the first Hibs manager finished third in 16 years. But it was probably one of the weaker top flights to do it in.
Yeah, my favourite bit about that is for like 3 weeks, Jack Ross was saying in every post-match interview that they hadn't been out the top 4 in so long and all this kind of stuff. I don't think he was in the top 4 after that.
Right, oh sorry, before we move on, we should talk about Aberdeen, because they've now won 3 games in a row.
They're in some run, yeah. Mm.
And Stephen Glass knows what he's doing after all.
He's a man again.
Dave Cormack was right.
Yeah, it's always good. I was talking to Tom.
Let's not get carried away, they're still 6.
I was talking to Tom about this, I was saying that's what it seems to be, it's feast or famine with Aberdeen, but I like what they've done with bringing Emmanuel Thomas back in, that's coincided with good results. They had decent results at the start when he played. And that front 4 of Emmanuel Thomas, Hedges, Watkins and Ramirez has nice balance to it. Everyone's bringing something to the party.
Ramirez almost scored one of the goals of the season as well. Yeah. He was inches away from putting that in the top corner. What an effort that was.
And then when you've got like Brown and Ferguson, there's no reason why that can't. I think Watkins is so key. I actually argue that Watkins is a key player, because Ramirez is good, but Ramirez actually, as we've been speaking about, He's a poacher. He plays in between the posts. He actually isn't that great when he's back to goal. So when you bring Watkins in, who is good when he's back to goal, who does run the channels really well, suddenly you've got like the perfect foil. And
he
everyone
was really what they were missing at the start of the season, and definitely.
And now they've got every single player has someone that compliments them.
How are they getting away with that fucking defence, though?
I know. I was going to say, how did, like, if you'd said to us a couple of weeks ago that Ross McCrory and David Bates are starting to form some sort of coherent centre half partnership, we'd be like, how? What's exactly. what kind of witchcraft is this?
They've kept a clean sheet against the team that scored 9 goals this season. That's, so like, we can
they've only conceded 1 goal in 3 games.
All right, okay, that is fair. And you've got Funzo Ojo and Hayes backing them up. So
what's going on?
Fair enough, Glass. Mate, he's making things work with a very poor hand. He's bluffing. He's bluffing all the time, he's getting away with it.
He's a great poker player. Yeah, yeah. Don't know what it's got anything to do with football, but he's doing it. Right, let's move on to the game at Tannadice, because, yeah, we've got concerns about St Johnstone. We've also got, even though they're still fourth on the table, got some concerns about Dundee United, because their recent form has been shit. I think they've not won in... they've not won in 4 games now, with 3 defeats. 3 defeats on the bounce point as well. And, yeah, Craig, you watched some of this game, didn't you? And I think there's a lot of their problems coming for the fact that Jando Fuchs has just basically given up and he just wants to leave in January.
It's certainly a strange way to try and manufacture a move, yeah.
To play like fucking shit.
Yeah, exactly. After listing all the big clubs that are supposedly after you. Yeah, I mean, I think this was a game where it's all kind of come to a head for him a little bit. I think he's slowly been getting worse over a number of weeks now. And let's not forget, that's from quite a high bar that he set for himself. He was vital to a lot of Dundee United's recent success, or what the successes that they've had over this calendar year. But yeah, it was just his last few weeks in a nutshell. Really, he was dispossessed at the start of at the edge of his own box in the first half for a very good Livy chance. He did the same in the second half, which led to him giving away the penalty. I don't know why there was any debate about whether it was or not a penalty.
It's definitely a penalty.
Yeah, the Dundee United TV folk were adamant it wasn't.
It's because he does that thing that players try to do a lot, where they sort of step in front and it's like they're using their body to protect the ball, but it's like they're already claiming they've already won the ball. But that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, it just runs into him.
Yeah, and you do that in the box, you're very much running the risk.
Pulls other players out the way to get there as well.
I put us in this mess in the first place. Let me sort it out. Oh, no.
And that was it. He was overcompensating for giving the ball away again. And I think that was a big... I don't think it was... While I think these are maybe two of the more tactical managers in the league, I don't think it was the most tactical match. I think it just came down to... Livingston just played the day better and they won the midfield battle. I think it pretty much came down to them winning the midfield battle. Dylan Levitt's a huge miss for Dundee United at the moment. He was supposed to play, pulled up in the warm-up. Declan Glass came in. He is a good player and he was still their best player, the most neat and tidy player on the ball. But they've really missed Levitt since he's gone out the team. That's kind of coincided with their poor form as well, him not being available. And I mentioned it earlier in the show, but Dundee United are another one of these teams that they just don't have a striker. They just really, that's a wee bit unfair on Nicky Clark. They don't have like a reliable goal scoring striker.
No one does, eh?
Submitting or another.
Is that just, sorry to put you on the spot, Craig, and please tell me if you didn't watch it in that depth, but is that how Dundee United lined up shape-wise? Because that's completely different to what they had on Sports Scene.
Nah, they were just a back four. I think that's maybe because of how much Freeman was getting forward. But he had to come off at half-time. He got injured, and it was probably Dundee United's best chance of the match, actually. The one that Hearts puts over the bar, he really should do better with it. But Freeman does very well to set that up, but he takes a challenge, he takes a heavy one in it, and he plays on till half-time, and then Sporla replaced him.
Talking about Nicky Clark, in 2021, he's only scored twice in the league.
Wow, because I've got in my head that he scored quite a few.
I think it was last season.
He scored quite a few at the start of
last season, and it's like... And he scored at Easter Road right in front of me when we got humped off this pile of shite 3-0. But yeah, I mean, to go to Livingston, what a difference, what a signing Omi Onga's starting to look, Craig.
And Jason Holt, by the way, he's been brilliant.
They're sort of dovetailing pretty well.
The two of them have been very good, and Jason Holt was probably the best player in the park. I mean, I think Obalaye's second one is a goal. I think it looks like it's very difficult to tell conclusively whether he's onside or not, but it looks to me like he's probably onside. And what a control and finish that is.
I know.
There was two goals scored by centre-halves at the weekend that were delicious strikers' goals. His and Shaughnessy's for St Mirren were both just absolutely... Well, sorry, I'm talking about one that didn't count there, you know what I mean? But even his penalty, he even took his penalty like a season... Like
Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he never misses, so it works for him.
So, yeah. Obalaye, they missed him when he was out of the team.
Aye, definitely. He's been probably one of the signings of the season, not just one of the signings, the best signings that Livy have made. But they're another team that are on a very good run. They're looking very good at the moment. They after a bit of a patchwork effort at the start of the season, they're another team that's kind of really settled in and have a settled sort of team now. And Jack McMillan's just the latest square peg success from
doesn't
from
make any sense whatsoever. And then, oh, he's doing quite well, even scoring goals. And yeah, now they've brought Bruce Anderson back in after using Andrew Shinney in the striker. So he's you're just saying the square pegs and round holes. He's creating himself options when it doesn't look like he has any, and that's something that Martindale's done really, really well. And then you start looking at that back four. Penrice, I actually think, looked all right since he's came into the team playing at left back. And then you've got Devlin, Obalaye, Penrice, Stryek. He blows a bit hot and cold, but he's a good goalie nonetheless. And then you've got that spine that you're talking about with Holt and Omiyonga, and it all starts making a bit of sense.
I must insist that Jason Holt is now referred to as the Poundland Chavy from now on.
Okay, it's a mouthful, but... We'll
And you've got the Poundland Chavy. That's fine.
We've got the Poundland Chavy, Stefan Omiyonga.
Should Hibs have tried more of an effort to bring Omiyonga back?
I was always... I liked Omiyonga, I sometimes get caught out, and I'm bad for this. I very much get whipped in by busy players in Scottish football. It's something I'd say it's my weakness. We all have it. But like busyness. I mean, for example, you all hear how much I talk about Bruce Anderson as someone I really, really like. And that's so busy players, I think, go really a long way in Scottish football when it's so high octane and the ball sort of trades places so regularly. That I always think that if the busier players can really sort of come of age in Scottish football and they can really look good. So Omiyonga, I would think we don't have Hibs don't have a wealth of options in the centre of park. I mean, that's why Doyle Hayes and Neil pretty much play regardless of form. Yeah. Now they play all the time because we don't really have many other options to play in there. So
I didn't see this game, but he ran the show against Hibs.
Absolutely, I was worried. I was like, this is annoying. And yeah, he was superb. So great work for Martindale, and it's good for him because we had that middle ground where talking about just us on this podcast, people referring to him as the best manager in the league and then the best tactical manager in the league, all this sort of stuff, which is fair enough because he did win 10 games in the trot and get to a final. I mean, it's hard to
He's done it repeatedly against Celtic as well, though. He can execute a tactical plan. Yeah, he's shown he can.
And then he's had a real downtime where they struggled a bit towards the end of last season, and then that bled into this season. You're thinking, right, did we get carried away? And now he's coming back, so you see that, yes, maybe he's not the best manager in the world, but he's still a very, very... He's really shown he's a very, very good manager. And the ability to bounce back when it all goes shit, it's not as easy as people seem to think it is. I mean, we just saw Jack Ross has basically just been sacked off the back of his first bad spell.
Yeah. And, okay, let me just put you on the spot right now. Give me a one-word answer. Who's going down? Who's finishing bottom, anyway? Put it that way.
Oh, sword.
I'm gonna stick with County.
Yeah, I really don't know now.
I'm gonna go Dundee.
Dundee are one of my favourite teams in the league to watch. I actually think they're good. I think they've got a really nice blend, but they've got you're right, they've got the ones with the gaping hole right now. They look like they've got the gaping weakness that the other teams don't have, so maybe I'd lean towards there as well.
Right, let's go to the first of the two matches on Sunday. That was Hearts 0, Rangers 2, a result that wasn't entirely surprising, but maybe a bit of a surprise at how this game went in the end, because Hearts dominated a lot of the ball. The Rangers sat back for a lot of it. Rangers did a lot of time wasting as well, which is not something you see from Rangers sides anywhere, except for maybe in Europe, if you're, you know, trying to play a big team.
Can we just see on that? Can we just have an end to Rangers fans complaining about other teams' time wasting now, since their goalkeeper was doing it 30 minutes into a match? Can that just be the end to it? That there's, oh, the ball was only in play for 55 minutes.
Can everyone just stop pretending that everyone's team doesn't have dickheads in it who do stuff?
Exactly.
It really does blow me away in football. Like, everyone gets raging about one thing, and then when you start doing it, nobody says a word. It's like, you're all seeing it. You all know the goalie's going to pick the ball up, put it down at one side of the six, pick it up and take it out. We all do it. It's the same thing we all do. So let's not get ourselves too frustrated about it and scream and shout all the time.
So it was an interesting kind of tactics for Rangers. I mean, yeah, they're 2-0 up, so you need to take that into account. But you still just expect Rangers at Tynecastle, 2-0 up, just to continue to try and batter the home team.
Or at least to break and threaten, look like they're going to score more, which I know they did later in the game.
They had like a 10-minute spell in the second half. Yeah, they had about four chances, but other than
I'm talking specifically between going 2-0 up and...
Four, quite a lot.
It is quite a lot.
What you mean, though. It's all relative. It's Rangers.
It was weird that it all happened in this moment rather than like throughout the match.
Yeah, because between 2-0 up and half-time, Rangers sat in and just basically said to Hearts, let's see what you've got. And Hearts didn't have enough. They just clogged the central areas, and Hearts rarely got the ball to Boyce. The couple of times they did get the ball to Boyce, he almost scored enough.
They only got the ball to him in very good areas, which he fucked up all the time.
Well, I'm talking about the first half still, but the chance at 0-0, which he maybe should do better with, and then the one where he spins at the edge of the box.
He's Bassey, really, and he
really unlucky. Very unlucky with that.
Vintage Boyce, that one where he can hold, and he's quite strong and he turns quite quickly. But he hits hard in low shots.
Exactly, aye. But the second half was a different matter. The one where he's the cutback that he puts over the bar, I mean, that's obviously the one that he's definitely got to score. He's never favourite with a double save with McGregor, I don't think. So, yeah.
Yeah, the chance of the first half as well. I think that he knows McGregor made a save at an angle, but he could have maybe done better.
Aye, you're right, aye. I mean, I'll tell you what, I was surprised when I watched the highlights of this today. I watched it live, but when I watched the highlights today, I was surprised with how many chances Hearts had in the game. I'd forgotten just how many chances Hearts had had. And I think you had said that fairly early on in the second half, but you'd said it's just not Hearts' day.
It was when Ginelli's cross was turned onto the bar
hit the
Bassey. Bassey. And bounced out. It didn't go over the line. It was just like
the amount of times luck went against us after that as well.
The Kings hit the bar as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, it was just there was two stinking goals to lose, but it was a very good performance from Hearts in the end. Unlucky.
First one especially is terrible defending on numerous counts. Taylor Moore is far too easily sold a dummy by Ryan Kent.
Devlin as well.
Devlin.
Fucking hell. He does that daft thing with his arms, and that actually stops him being able to move.
He may as well not be there.
He can't balance properly to do the tackle against Sakala. And I do actually think Sakala notices I'm doing it and thinks, actually, I'll just run there, because how are you going to move? You can't. You'll fall over if you do it too quickly.
And nobody bothers to Mark Morelos.
Yeah, for ages. He's there for ages. There's no like good movement. He just wait here. Goal.
But the second goal, I mean, it's not great defended either. And it was kind of, this was Hart's game plan, kind of coming back to bite them, because they played with a very high line. Mm. But it's still incredible from Aribo.
Suter switches off. But yeah, you're right. The touch to kill it's brilliant. And it's a great finish. Not just a great finish, but past the keeper that's been saving just about fucking everything that's gone at him.
It's absolutely perfect. It's like the dragged shot with the left peg, right, hits the side net.
He's not even let that get to him psychologically or anything, you know what I mean? Because I'm sure that has put a few players off going through on Gordon this season.
Absolutely.
Like, this guy's in such form.
And they start doing daft things.
I've got to do something special or something like that.
And then just kick it right at his torso or something because it gets too late in the day.
That was what they did in the second half, basically. I think it's Arfield, Sakala and Morelos all pretty much had the same chance.
Smashed it
right at Gordon. And Arfield had the other one where he put it wide.
I was quite surprised Hearts went with a back four. And I know this worked pretty well at Parkhead.
He used it against Livy as well.
But even though Hibs are in really poor form, they done a back three against Rangers and it worked very well. Rangers created two chances over the whole 90 minutes. And so I was shocked when Hearts are obviously very good at using the back three. It's actually what they're used to doing this season, and they've had a very recent example of it working well. and I'm not doing it. And the other side of that, I was shocked about, and the second goal comes from this, under Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, Aribo or Arfield breaking the lines and going beyond the strikers for that Goldson long ball. I mean, Arfield literally scored it against Livingston recently. It's been a bit of a feature of their play. So if you have a back three, someone can drop off and actually can mark that runner.
Yeah.
And the Hearts have chosen not to do that. And that's easy to be criticised because Hearts had a lot more chances than maybe Hibs had as they grabbed. So that I can see the flip side, but maybe starting with the back three.
Well,
and then moving it to back four. Again, it's extremely easy to say after.
So they changed it for the last two games away for home.
We started a little bit under the three,
I think there needed to be change away for home because teams have started to figure out the 3-4-3. And maybe it still would have been the case at Tynecastle as well, because St Mirren gave Hearts a very good game.
They did,
and with a better side until Hearts opened the score, I would say. And so maybe it just needed to be changed in general. But, you know, in the 3-4-3, Hearts are undefeated this season at Tynecastle, and you just think maybe keep it, especially since it worked well against Rangers early in the season as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's been good examples. I think the team in Europe done really well against Rangers, where they used a back three as well. It seems like Rangers struggle against it, so you think you maybe go with it. But I do quite like the 4-1-4-1 that Rangers went with. I like it because it allows. It's been the main thing that he's changed. It's not like, because Rangers are so rigid under Gerrard in their formation. This allows for, and it's no surprise that Aribo and Arfield are the specific ones that are enjoying playing in the formation. And I think it works nicely because you still get the width. That's not going to change at all. But it also means that Morelos, who's such a handful, that when there's two, he can occupy two defenders, and it does leave. People are occupied, they're worried about Morelos, and then Aribo or Arfield could just go in behind. I think I can see the sensibilities behind it.
And he started to look like Morelos again.
Yeah,
like Morelos before Gerrard kind of turned him into more of a link man.
Yeah, and he was giving it all the stuff at the end of the game. I don't know, was he taking the piss at Ange Postecoglou when he was doing the... weird thing where Ange Postecoglou, I was talking about this, he does the chest thumping, but he does it really softly with the palm of his hand, and then he points at the crowd after it. That's quite a unique thing, but I saw Morelos doing that at the end, and doing that I was like, pretty niche if you are. But if he's at it again, then that's all the better, because Morelos, he was becoming a bit more of a pussycat. I've not really seen him do any nasty or
mental
recently, and it's affected his game. I think you said it on a podcast before, Fowler, like, if you take that out of his game, will it make him a worse player? Morelos has proved yes.
Aye, it did. He needs to get set off again.
Yeah. Three games out, comes back 10 goals.
Aye. Right, let's move on to the game at Parkhead that happened later on Sunday. 1-0 to Celtic against Motherwell. Celtic managing to win the game despite the fact they had no fit central striker for this one. No Adjeti, no Furuhashi, and no Greek boy.
Giannakis,
that's it, sorry. Georgios Giannakis.
Hurry down the chimney tonight.
They still managed to get the victory just basically because Tom Rogic was magic again in this game. And I think he's even been starting to play 90 minutes recently. I mean, what impact Postecoglou has had on him.
It's really weird, isn't it, how all of a sudden he can, all of a sudden seems to be able to play these 90 minutes. Yeah. And then you add to their list of injuries now James Forrest. I think Celtic have officially put more strain on the NHS than Omicron recently.
Hey. And that Craig's actually left the room. He's away. That's his work done for tonight.
That's all I've got on Celtic.
I saw a bit of the game. I wasn't watching it closely. I had my family around at the time, but it was on in the background. But like, going back to Rogic, Ken, what would be funny is that now he's going to end up getting a new deal. So then you're going to end up that Tom Rogic's going to be played for Celtic for like fucking 12 years or something. It's going to hit that where like, that, and then with all the trophies he's won, he'll be like the most decorated player in Celtic's history. That's going to happen. That is going to happen. By hook or by crook, not saying that he deserves to be in that, but just factually, he'll be like, you'll fucking have millions of medals over a 12-year period. But Motherwell will be really disappointed with what happened, because second half Celtic really, they turned the screw a bit and they were in like full control, and Motherwell couldn't get out of their own half, and they never ever ever looked like scoring an equaliser. But it was different in the first half, and Motherwell were really quite brave at the start, and they were getting at them, so they'll be absolutely spewing to lose a goal like that, that they lost from like that set piece. Although I do think it's quite smart those types of set pieces, because then going into the hole when people play the zonal marking, mm-hmm. there should be more of that. Because if you're good, if everyone's marking an area, a player can just drop off, and I think it should happen more often. Because I mean, the stats worldwide always seem to point to that zonal marking actually, you concede less goals, losing it, whatever. But that seems like a really simple way. Rodgic just going round the back and then running round and then just rolling off, and he's getting to hit a clean shot because everyone's marking a zone. And especially when you're a team like Celtic, when people are a bit worried and you've got those deep free kicks and corners, the fucking zonal marking is just basically everyone across the 6-yard line. There was no real nuance to the marking whatsoever. And it was really easy for Rodgic. You see him just running around. I was trying to work out, is that a really good set piece that's been practiced? Or have they just, they're intelligent players.
Mm-hmm. Did they just see him standing there?
Because he's in the back post and he's completely free. And then he just runs to the edge of the box.
There's nobody near him at any point.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to know, but they would never say, because obviously that takes away the...
Should Millwall have had a penalty?
I thought the one on Tony Watt.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was a penalty, yeah.
Carter Vickers, I think, with a chance. He had a good game other than that.
He's having a very good season.
He has, and Starfelt's even coming into form as well. So.
And is that because of Vickers? Because he seems to be a really calming influence. He's not Van Dijk, right? I'm not saying that, but he's bringing those kind of vibes where he's sort of like really, really... He's sort of coasting through games, and I can see him. He's pointing quite a lot, so you can see when a defender's getting more confident because they start worrying about everyone else because they're so unsure of themselves.
Take Virgil van Dijk, remove pace, height, and footballing ability, and you've got Carter Vickers.
But do you understand?
Which is still a very good player.
Yeah, but do you understand me? You can start seeing them growing in confidence because they start worrying about what everyone else is up to because they're feeling quite assured of themselves, and then his passing ability. It's obviously right up Andrew Postecoglou's street in terms of how he wants to play. Mm-hmm. And it works really well because you've got, he's playing into McGregor or he can play quickly wide. So I don't know if 6 or 10 million starts to push the envelope, but if they get 5 or 6 the way it's going just now, that doesn't sound too mad to me.
They paid 7 for Julian, I'd say on this basis, there's not much between them.
And he's improved. Well, he's improved in front of your eyes because he was a relatively shaky at the start. But I think it's coming to a massive club. You've got these Champions League, European games. It's like that. You forget that with the signings that come into the Old Firm. It's like they get thrown right into the fire right away. Is if you fucking lose this game, we're fucked. We've lost 15 million. Like straight away, and everyone. It's like the biggest game of the season, and it's your first ones when you come in. So I can see why some players maybe Starfelt being a prime example. But I think Vickers is maybe bringing Starfelt on. And. And like I was saying before, that what I loved about Ange Postecoglou is what he's done with the shape and off the ball movement has really protected what was a weak soft centre. But now I'm starting to think that soft centre is not even that weak anymore.
Well, I think part of it is he's persisted with those guys. Mm-hmm. There's so many times where he could have ripped it up and started again, or lots of other managers would have lost faith in what they were trying to do, but he's stuck by that partnership. He's had faith, especially in Starfelt, and he's been rewarded with it now. And I think Joe Hart's a big part of that as well. Joe Hart's been fantastic since he came in. I know he's still Joe Hart and he still takes unnecessary risks, and he probably punched the ball outside his box at one point in this match, but he made an absolutely fantastic save. I think Sunday was an absolutely amazing display of goalkeeping. We didn't even mention it in the Hearts Rangers game.
Oh, Alan McGregor, yeah.
Great. Both goalkeepers had fantastic saves in that game. Same in this game. Liam Kelly had a couple of fantastic saves.
Yeah, that one for Turnbull's brilliant.
Yeah, both of the best saves that Hart and Kelly made, they were both going the other way and had to readjust and go back. And they were Kelly saved that one-on-one right at the start from Forrest. Mm-hmm. He had another one as well, which escapes me. But to go back to what I was saying about Celtic specifically, Joe Hart's been a big part of how settled and how well they've been doing defensively, and
like
how many clean sheets they've had.
And they're like a trio now. Yeah. And they all. And it's funny with Hart because
Juranovic is one of the best players in the league, I think.
Juranovic is absolutely brilliant. He's so... just so technically
he's
brilliant.
Just a really, really good player.
And Hart, when he makes that brilliant save and then he just lies down in front of it, I love that. He just makes himself a long wall. It's quite good.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're just hammering it off him. Like, and then he gets, and what I love with Joe Hart, and sometimes it's bad and sometimes it's good, but it's always entertaining. He looks so pumped after. He reminds me before, like, I'm going on a fucking night out.
Up.
Like, it reminds me of when I was like about 20-year-old going into a nightclub. Fucking yes, here we go. Get Lil Jon get low on, and here we fucking go. But this is like you see him, and he's like shaking, which. Like, for sometimes it's probably not good because, like, you don't look concentrated. You're going to do something fucking mad any second now.
Yeah.
But, like, there when it stopped, you just see this guy. It's like, despite him doing football for years, he still fucking gets the same pump that he would have when he was, like, 16. And there's something quite nice about that, but also worrying. So, and the beauty of Joe Hart is that he's going to be great for Celtic, but he's also going to fuck up. So he's just going to be box office for us. But there's no way that we can now say that he's not been a really, really good signing there. Fuck up in the League Cup final, though.
Right, let's
Can we talk about Van Veen quickly? Okay. When he kicks the ball away, when Joe Hart's about to take the goal kick. Van Veen is the biggest arsehole in the league. Every time, now I've been watching him, he's doing...
In a team of arseholes.
Like, as I was saying after the
Managed
Hibs
by
game,
an arsehole.
You were at the Hibs, you were at the Hibs game that I was at, Craig. You were reporting on it when Macy just tries to throw the ball and just grabs his arm and stops him from doing it. Like, there's no... It stops Hibs from... Counter-attack. It wasn't like it was a major counter-attack. It just was pointless. So it seems petty. Oh, I'm not happy. I'm not playing very well. Right, I'm stopping this. And then that one as well. And he gained nothing down, apart from a sore shin and a booking.
Goes down injured, exactly.
So again, as Van Veen, he's another one. He's never not involved. He's even when he's playing shit, he's very, very, very involved.
I did think Joe Hart knew what he was doing there as well.
Of course he does, a little bit, but if he's going to put himself in that position.
Aye, it was funny.
Talk about, like, you were going back to the Rangers one, Barisic.
Booked for getting punted.
Yeah, see that red card for Barisic one for Ginelli. Yeah. Barisic knows that he's on the booking. Because Ginelli comes over, and he shouldn't come over, but he's daft. But him and Devlin are fine. They've done the tackle and they've calmed down quite quickly. And he spots it, Ginelli, and he just starts shaking. And he just starts, like, fists start going. Clearly, he just wants to create a...
His Adam's apple starts bulging.
Yeah. He's trying to create an environment there where all the players come over. I think he spots who it is. No, he's on a booking. And he just starts going like that. Because I don't think Ginelli doesn't actually do anything.
He just gets in his face.
Yeah, he just gets in his face. So, like, he just starts going, and then everyone starts running over, and that creates, like, this whole vibe, and then the referee feels like he's got to make a decision. And going back again, because I missed something that I really wanted to say earlier, and I apologise, I'm going back to Tannadice.
This is some jumping about. Yeah,
but Tam Courts, I've got it written down, and I really wanted to. When he says at full time, if we'd won this game, we would have been 12 points off our total of last season, so it's a big incentive. What? What the fuck are you on about? And it's clearly like, that's the most self-preservation pish, because he knows that he knows he's lost 4 games on the bounce or whatever. So he just, it's like he's tried to shoehorn into something to show that how much better their season's been. And he tries to be so cute about it that it's like, it's so obvious.
It overcomplicates it. Yeah, just say you've got more points at this point stage of the last season.
It's so transparent what you're doing. Fuck off, Tam Courts.
If we'd won this game, we would have been 12 points off our season total.
That was a big incentive for us. If you go 12 points, everyone gets an extra grand in their payback.
Right, let's go on to our final game. We won't spend too much time talking about this because it was... Well, I mean, I don't think the St. Johnstone Aberdeen game was particularly good, but this game was rubbish because I watched it and you watched it, Tony. I feel like I was struggling to stay awake for the first half an hour of this. So I had to properly sit up, like, slap myself in the face a couple of times. So I was just like, I had no idea what had been happening, just continually drifting in and out of consciousness. St. Mirren won, Hibs won. Two teams that don't win football games anymore, surprisingly, nobody won the football game.
And I'm on Y Scout and I'll be looking up the team sheets for all this, which gives us a shape, and they'd be so bored by this game, they're leaving Barcelona, so I'm bored.
Does it mention the bum assist from Charles Dunn?
I thought Hibs were the better team in the first half, but that's an extremely low bar. I was actually mildly offended by how bad St. Mirren were. They were... Because they were, like, I know you don't, sometimes I think it is, you don't really respect how bad the conditions are when you're watching. And I do get that. But this was just, it was so bland, the game. St. Mirren done absolutely nothing in the first half. It was like they didn't even take part. Hibs had the Nisbet header.
Maybe if he's didn't steal off them every 6 months.
have some bloody players. And then that's like, and the Hibs sort of went to this 4 at the back they've been doing recently, which I do think sort of gives us, sort of Josh Campbell does a lot more attacking, and it suits our attacking players a bit more, and it allows Boyle to play on the right and Murphy on the left, which I think allows us to dominate games more because we've got ball carriers, so everything doesn't have to go through Doyle Hayes and Newell, and it doesn't always have to be sort of really pretty. You can just pass the ball out wide, Boyle will carry it 40 yards, Hibs are on top. Like, you know, that gives us more ways of moving up the pitch, if you like, because Cadden, while he's good, he's really just quite an honest runner rather than someone who's going to dribble past people, and he's tactically very aware. But that's not the same as having people that ball carry. So that helped for Hibs to sort of dominate the game. Then it went into half-time, Fowler, and I know you're watching that. That coverage of St Mirren is fucking wow. It's so bad. We're watching, like, watching a first half that's so fucking boring, and then we go into that woman and that guy, what was it, Campbell Ogilvy?
I think it was Campbell Money, wasn't
Campbell
it?
Campbell Money, and the women on there, and they've got like zero chemistry, so they're just standing in front of a board. And the opening question was, after I've watched this horror, I'm hungover because the night before I've been round at my mate's house and we'd booked my wedding, we booked a date, so we had a little drink, that was fun. And then I'm just sitting there, I'm hungover, and I'm trying to like stay with it. I'm like, oh, I'm doing the podcast on Monday, I need to pay attention. And she just goes, what's it like to play in the rain? What the fuck are you on about? That cannot be the opening question after that first half, is what's it like to play there? And she kept on doing this, so, but us mere mortals don't understand. Well, I mean, I've been outside before. Like, absolutely, like, bonkers stuff. And then we go back, and St Mirren improved in the second half. But Hibs were, like, up until the goal, then the usual, they started sitting back. And what annoyed me about Hibs specifically is St Mirren put Hibs under pressure for about a total of 4 minutes in this game and scored. And it was big Shaughnessy again, who done it at Easter Road, and it's the exact same goal at the exact same time.
It was good to see Dre Wright, though.
Yeah, he came on, and this was something I was laughing about, because you've got Scott Allen. Obviously, everyone's moaning about Scott Allen not playing. That's a popular one for half the Hibs support. And then David Gray becomes manager, who's, I'm assuming, Scott Allen's friend and played with him for years. Doesn't play him, and actually goes to Dre Wright first. So he's actually further down David Gray's roster
than Jack Ross's.
He's been impressed with Dre Wright in training. That was all funny, but yeah, I mean, it was Alex Gogic was back in the team. He strikes me as a David Gray player.
Darren McGregor looked like he was on one.
Darren McGregor's on one every. Darren McGregor is so, and I love Darren McGregor. I love it. I think he's been.
He's like claiming he got the ball as he's like coming out of that challenge on the edge of the box. Yeah. He's got his arms in the air saying, "Got the ball."
There's not a game that's went past where Darren McGregor hasn't fucked up when he's had to play, because he's old and he's shit now. And that's not. And again, Darren McGregor's been an absolutely brilliant player for Hibs, and he's won a cup and he's been brilliant. But there's no way that it should be Hanlon, Porteous, and then next up, Darren McGregor.
36-year-old Darren McGregor.
Like, shouldn't be next up. And he's still handsome, and it's great. But and he does all this strip stuff, and it's brilliant. But he's so but yeah, he's just so past it, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with me, but he's had a few cruciate ligament injuries. I'm not surprised at 36 he's past it, but he is, and he's cost us a lot of goals this season when he's won the part. And it was him marking Shaughnessy at the end, and Shaughnessy's about 3 yards ahead of him by the time the great cross from Tanzer comes in, and Tanzer's starting to get that. Tanzer's had a few assists recently.
His delivery's great.
Yeah.
Set pieces as well. That's one really good thing about Tanzer, is his deliveries.
And get Tate back in the team so they can have been banging on about this since the previous show, that Tanzer and Tate should be scoring goals to each other, assists and Tate.
I think they play Miller because he's the only player on the entire squad with any pace.
Yeah, but he's rubbish. I've watched, he is rubbish.
Right, I think that'll do us. Thank you very much for listening. We are now going to record the Patreon, which we are going to do looking at the Daily Record's top 50 players in Scottish football in 2021, because I had a lot of people talking on social media earlier and in our group chat as well. So we're going to go through that. Tony, you don't know it as well.
I've only seen the first couple, and I didn't look because I was working today, and I was going to, and my idea was like, I'll finish work and then I'll start doing the prep for the show. But then I messaged you saying, would it not be fun just to do like a reveal? Because I know that I saw the first two names, and I'm like, this is going to guard a few people's goats. So why not have a laugh and just reveal it? I'm saying it'll be like Brass Eye. When he has to look through all the women that he would have sex with. Yes. No. Never in 100 years, no.
Right, so if you want to listen to that, that's patreon.com/tennispodcast.
£2.
That was going to be the £2 a month tier. So there you go. And thank you to everybody who signed up after Thursday show. We always get a big kind of influx of new subscribers after the list podcast comes
out. And also that you explained what the actual name of the you changed the actual...
And that may have helped as well.
Yeah, exactly. I listened to it today when I was travelling around for work, and it was a thoroughly enjoyable show, but I just said that at the end. We've just had the wrong thing up for the whole year. That's your livelihood. That's all our livelihoods, Craig.
So yeah, patreon.com/terracepodcast. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, the best place to do so is Twitter at Terrace Podcast. Tori, say goodbye.
Bye.
Craig, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And I'm Craig Fowler saying goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.